Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Up Front on Football Ramble Presents. I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
And I'm Chloe Morgan.
On today's show, Man City win the Conte Cup and finally end their Chelsea curse thanks to a sensational second half at Plough Lane. We ask whether it signals a changing of the guard for next season. And after Viviana Miedema hit a century of goal involvements in the WSL, we explore how her game has developed since joining Arsenal in 2017 and where her future lies this summer. And it's International Women's Day, so we're going to share and celebrate some of the women who've inspired us in our lives, both in and out of football.
Whipped across, Mead, Kirby again, sure it's time, Ellen White, the record draws near.
Well, unfortunately, it's another remote show this afternoon because our resident goalkeeper had a bit of an accident on Sunday. Chloe, tell us what happened. We're sending our best wishes.
Yeah, a bit of a clash. Basically went full force into another player at the Coventry game. And I think she's also out injured as well. She came off the pitch, I think, about 5 minutes after we collided. It was pretty bad. But yeah, sort of, I think we're both just getting scans now to kind of find out what the situation is. But yeah, just currently holed up in my bedroom with a leg brace. So it's so weird. I miss you guys. I want to be there.
A bit of a shout out. Sophie was at that game and sent me a message saying Chloe's just like made this amazing save and had a really bad clash with a player. She said she got up and she carried on for the rest of the half and was like, I don't know how she did it. So tough cookie.
It was, I think it was just because it was such a good game. It was such a good game to be involved in. And I think there's kind of a sense of once you're on the field, like you don't want to be changing goalkeepers too early on, especially when it happens sort of 3 minutes into the game. So, yeah, I was just like, I'll see it out, see how it goes. But it just got progressively worse. And then I sat down at half time and it was an absolute no-go. So Emily Ormond to the rescue came on, had a really good performance. So, yeah, really, really a tough result to take.
Wow. You're so brave, man. You're so brave. But we're wishing you our best. And yeah, keep us updated on the scans and everything as well. We hope it goes really well. And the goalkeepers union is tight. So we know that you will be supported and coming back ready to go on the pitch. But also, what was brave? I'm trying to do a segue here. Manchester City's second half performance on Saturday.
Oh, lovely. That was seamless.
What a turnaround. I did not see that coming.
No,
at all.
No. And I think it's fair to say that we didn't see that coming. I think it's fair to say that most people probably saw Chelsea edging it. I didn't see Chelsea running away with it. I didn't really see anyone running away with it, to be honest. But yeah, second half was unreal. Really, really impressive performance from Man City. I know, you know, Gareth Taylor kind of touched on his criticism and how he thought it was maybe unjustified in the post-match press conference. But for me, look, I mean, I think some of that criticism was justified. Let's be real. I know they did have a lot of injuries, but they were also fielding a top team each week and he wasn't able to get the best out of them at the time. But equally, he massively deserves praise and plaudits for what the team has done in the last kind of 12 matches or so. They haven't lost, I think, in 12 games. And for what he did on Sunday, he absolutely outmaneuvered Emma Hayes in that second half.
I think just to touch on that, I think obviously I was sort of reading through some of the interviews that he was given after the game and, you know, there really was a kind of, it's a game of two halves, I think. In the first half, it did seem like Chelsea just had the upper edge. And I think when they scored that first goal, I think the maybe naive part of me at the time felt that actually this is probably how the game was going to go and how it was going to be seen out. But the second half, I mean, we saw a completely different Man City side. And I think, you know, there were comments from Gareth Taylor saying that he gave a really inspirational halftime talk to say, let's have some hope and belief here that we can come back and pull the game out of the bag. And for them to come back and win 3-1 was just absolutely outstanding. And they deserved it. They were the much better opponent in the second half. It was a different team.
I'm going to drop something maybe fairly controversial here. And I want to see what you
guys
think.
Every week.
Because I know after the FA Cup final in December, we didn't clash, but some of us disagreed about whether it was Chelsea were that good or Arsenal were that bad. And I think shades of the Chelsea performance on Saturday in that second half, it gave me Arsenal at Wembley vibes. Chelsea were that bad. It felt like the collapse in December against Wolfsburg in the Champions League final group game, in which they just completely unravelled. It was those moments in a football match, and Chloe, I'm sure you can relate, and in times you may have had this in your career, but you're looking at players who just don't know how to get themselves out of a situation. They look tired. It's like stuck in the mud. They can't do anything about it. There's nowhere to turn to. They've run out of ideas. They're so, so knackered and they don't know what to do. They're lost and they don't have any kind of leader on there to pick them up and get themselves out of the situation. So there was part of me that felt like, although City stepped it up, it was almost like they were given that opportunity because Chelsea were just that bad in the second half. Who wants to jump in? And
I don't think that's hugely controversial. I do think a lot of the reasons that Chelsea didn't play well in the second half is down to the fact that Man City shifted around their game plan a little bit. For me, it was a battle of midfields, and I just think there was no connection in the second half between defence and forwards for Chelsea. Harder and Kerr had to drop much deeper to try and get the ball. And we've talked about this before. For me, it reminded me there were shades of their loss to Reading. Now, obviously at Reading, they had a lot more chances, but it was shades of that they don't have enough problem solvers on the pitch, and they were struggling to find solutions. And that's what we were seeing, I think, massively in the second half. They can't rely on your Harders and your Kerrs to be the only problem solvers on the pitch, and they weren't getting the service. So for me, that's an area that I think Chelsea definitely need to work on, is problem solving during a match. I know they were missing players, and we didn't give Gareth Taylor much slack when he was missing players, and I don't think we can give Chelsea much slack for the fact that they were missing players either, because of the depth in that team. For me, the biggest loss was probably Aaron Cuthbert, but they had enough depth and
Jesse
experience.
Fleming, I think, energy-wise.
Yeah, but Jesse doesn't even play full matches or start all matches either. So, you know,
In that second half energy, kick up the arse that you would get from a sub or being able to bring on someone like Fleming or Cuthbert, they just lacked that. Had a poor game.
Yeah.
Lauren James came on. The first thing she did was not defend at the corner and let City score.
Yeah.
So I feel like it was not having the right sort of players on the bench to be able to hold the game out or even offer much going forward to see the game out.
I think it was a great deal of it was sort of game management. I found that Chelsea was a little bit lacking in that. I think, you know, as a such a successful team, I think you can sometimes be a victim of your own success, in the sense that because you're not used to losing that well, you don't know how to cope with sort of the adverse situations that arise. I mean, there was a completely different shift, I think, in Chelsea's energy in the second half. I mean, when they went that first goal down, that was when things started to drop off. And by the second, I was like, okay, I think the game is done by now, because 2-1, Chelsea didn't look like they were even wanted to really get back into the game that much. So no, I think the game management wasn't really there. And I think that a part of it, maybe, I mean, you can't really blame the pitch because both sides were dealing with that situation, but you could see that a lot of the pitch and the kind of the standards of the pitch, and Emma Hayes was talking about this in her pre-match interviews, it doesn't make for, you know, smooth streamlined passes. And I think Chelsea are, you know, both sides are very much used to that, but I think it would have worked better in Chelsea's favour.
Emma Hayes spoke as well about a lack of experience, which it's not something I would say about that Chelsea team.
She was reflecting, saying it was quite a young team that finished that game, but there were a lot of winners in that team. I mean, Sam Kerr scored a hat-trick in last year's final.
Yeah, I wouldn't really agree with that. There's plenty of experience. Even from this season alone, they've been in a number of finals and a number of big games. So I can't really get on board with that comment, but I think they rely too much on too few players to get them out of holes. And I think you need more players able to step up in those situations. And that's an area that they need to work on. And maybe, like you say, a victim of their own success. If they're not finding themselves in those positions enough, then maybe those players aren't experienced enough. And maybe that's what Emma Hayes means, in getting themselves out of those holes. And like I said, you can't rely on one or two players to kind of take the game by the scruff of the neck, because it's not going to work every time.
And as much as I've been negging on Gareth Taylor the entire season, and not giving him a lot of credit, I do actually want to give him a lot of credit. And even though I just mentioned, I think, you know, Chelsea unravelling gave City a lot of opportunities in that game, I do think he does deserve credit for utilising Caroline Weir and Georgia Stanway in very effective ways over the last couple of weeks. We know that Georgia Stanway had to fill in at right back because of injuries to Lucy Bronze and Esme Morgan. And he acknowledged that in his post-match, saying, you know, we haven't really had the squad depth for players to be able to play in their best positions at the moment. And now the last couple of weeks, they've been able to step up and actually play where they want to play. But also with Caroline Weir, he's mentioned, and he said this in his post-match, he's spoken to her recently and said, I want you to get into the box a little bit more, because you score a lot of goals from outside the box, but actually you need to be getting in the right positions, be getting, you know, in and around the 6-yard area, 8-yard area, whatever, and getting more chances there. That's where you can be really deadly and really effective. So I do want to give him a lot of credit for doing that and making City a bit more ruthless, whereas before it was a lot of reliance, and there still was an over-reliance on Lauren Hemp, but there was a reliance on Lauren Hemp doing all the work, playing a ball into Ellen White, seeing what happens. But I think, you know, there's been a realisation that is too one-dimensional, and they need other players like Georgia Stanway and Caroline Weir to be creative, to provide assists, provide opportunities and score more goals and be more ruthless in the box. And I think they've got that. And that's been a real change for City the last couple of weeks, and why they're now kind of looking like they're in the driving seat for Champions League as well.
Yeah, I definitely think we wouldn't focus on one player from that game for Man City. I think Lucy Bronze stood out. I thought Georgia Stanway was excellent. Alex Greenwood was really good. She's what I think kept them in that first half.
Honestly, I want to talk about her glow up at Manchester City, because I And like, apologies, Alex Greenwood, I disrespected you. Like, I never really rated her that much, but she has been so good at City, and her versatility to play at left back, left-sided centre back, good at set pieces, good delivery from corners, good delivery from free kicks. Like, she has been a revelation. Yeah. She's been playing really well for England, and I want to give her so much credit, and I apologise for disrespecting the good name of Alex Greenwood.
I 100% agree, because there were big names that stood out, but for me, she, I feel like their win came because it was only 1-0 and she was really solid in the first half when they were kind of looking a little bit shaky. She was there with interceptions, with blocks. I thought she was excellent. Yeah, we touched on Georgia Stanway. Every time she got the ball in that second half, she drove at that Chelsea defence. I was really, really impressed. Caroline Weir's a wizard. I mean, what can I say? I do want to say Lauren Hemp in the second half, they were switching around on the wings, and I think they identified that Lauren Hemp was having much more success against Jonna Anderson. In fact, they took Jon Anderson off. I thought some of the subs towards the end for Chelsea were unusual. But Lauren Hemp had that wing down. She did really, really influence the second half for sure.
I definitely agree with that. I think when I was looking at Greenwood and some of the sort of defensive clearances that she was making, I think they were absolutely critical at critical points, but I think Chelsea could have brought themselves into the game a little bit more. And I think I agree, you know, at the other end of the field, the link-up play between Stanway and Weir was just an absolute, was beautiful. It was magic. And I think, you know, Weir has obviously come from strength to strength, and she's been scoring absolute worldies this season, sort of, I'm just so impressed by her. And I think, you know, it was such a difficult game as well, because obviously, you know, I sort of went back to the pitch situation before, for her to be able to bed those goals like she did with that pitch condition. And I just think that they were just beautiful, and the goalkeeper had no chance. There was no chance of saving those either. So yeah, credit to her.
So what do we think moving forward for the rest of the season? Because I still think Chelsea, they've kind of got the advantage because they've got these three games in hand now. The expectation is that they'll win all of those games and they'll be 1 point above Arsenal, regardless of what Arsenal do. But talking to Chelsea fans, talking to other people, they still do think the advantage is with Arsenal. They've got the points on the board, obviously, which does help. And they would rather be setting the pace rather than chasing someone down. But what do you guys think? Do you think this is going to signal a bit of a change of the guard? Is this Chelsea getting knocked off their perch a little bit? What ramifications could this now have for the rest of the season in the FA Cup and in the WSL?
I don't think it's necessarily knocking them off their perch. They've always been close games with Man City. I know Chelsea have generally come out on top of those, but I think these kind of games they do learn from, and they do, not relish is the wrong word, they obviously don't want to lose, but I think you do obviously learn a huge amount when you do lose. You learn a lot about yourselves as a team and areas that you need to improve on. It'll do one of two things. Like, we saw the loss in the past in the Champions League kind of shook Chelsea a little bit. So it could kind of shake them a little bit, knowing they have to win those games in hand. But on the flip side, it could also light a fire up them. They've got Maren Mjelde back. They've got Magda Eriksson back. And I think that might do the latter. We'll see when they play West Ham this week. But an angry Chelsea is not a Chelsea I'd want to come up against.
I think it's that. And I think when you look at the kind of consistency that Chelsea have shown over the season, I mean, when was the last time that we were talking about Chelsea having a bad streak? They just don't really have bad streaks. They have maybe a game that doesn't go to plan, or it's not the way they wanted it to go. They have a singular loss, but I don't think we've ever seen a sort of situation where Chelsea have a loss and all of a sudden take a dive. So I don't think this is going to signal, you know, a really bad turn of form, or that Chelsea are suddenly going to, you know, stop being, you know, the contenders for the title. I think it's obviously Chelsea's to lose now, because the points they're in their favour if they win all of their games. But I don't think it's going to be a signalling of anything changing with the loss. I think if anything, it might inspire them to actually press on and work a bit harder now towards the league title.
We've got a very exciting few weeks of football ahead. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
There's more to Irish history than St. Patrick. And Shane Todd and Hazel Hayes are here to tell you all about it on We're Not Fucking Historians, the Irish history podcast with a few facts and plenty of crack, like the legendary Irish warrior, Cú Chulainn.
Some sources say he killed the dog by driving a hurling stone down its throat. Now he's six. Hazel, did someone say the naughty step?
Jesus, someone went to bed without supper, didn't they?
Someone called Super Nanny because he's at it again.
Or Ned Kelly, Australia's infamous Irish-born bushranger.
Punishment was imprisonment with or without hard labour.
I'd prefer without.
If possible. Like, if it's going. Do you have any without hard labour?
Yeah, can I have the without labour substitute, please?
Can I get the hard labour on the side?
Can I get almond instead of hard labour, please?
Search We're Not Historians. That's We're Not Historians in your favourite podcast app for weekly episodes every Tuesday.
Let's see what these people have said about it. Amazing. The Times. Whoa. New York Times. A lot of times. Great. Hazel herself.
We're Not Fucking Historians is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Rachel, I know a real passion of yours is the evolution of one Viviana Miedema. And on Sunday, it was quite the evolution because she became the first player in WSL history to reach 100 goal involvements. 70 goals, ridiculous. 30 assists, ridiculous. And Viv Stenius, which I think is what people are coining the partnership of Stina Blackstenius and Viviana Miedema, is absolutely electric. Was that the game on Wednesday night in which they smashed Reading to bits? Was that the game on Sunday in which they were smashing Birmingham and then kind of made things nervy for 10 minutes? This is a real revolution, a revelation, because when Blackstenius was signed, we were wondering what that meant for Miedema. She's still, you know, quite likely she still might leave, but we were kind of worried that this was a real signal that she was going and Blackstenius was now going to be the primary sort of like centre forward. But Miedema has shown that she can drop back and still be really effective and play with someone alongside her. And yeah, they're a pretty incredible combo at the moment.
Right. First of all, you've made me sound a little bit weird. But it's not like what? It's not like a passion project. I just want, I'm greedy. I want all of the good players in the WSL because I want to see them play week in, week out. So quite greedy. But I also do feel a little bit vindicated because I know we had this whole conversation about whether she should be playing deeper or not and whether it was going to be a good thing
Arsenal. I think it's only been effective because Blackstenius has come in. I think it wouldn't have been effective if she hadn't have been there, because at parts of this season before Blackstenius has been played with her, she was dropping deep, but there was no one making runs. Nope. And she was receiving the ball too deep.
Yep.
And therefore there was no options.
Totally agree. But
now she's got Blackstenius, it's like, yeah,
the conversation we had though was about whether dropping her deep and having Blackstenius up front was going to work. And I was pushing for it, and I'm really glad to see how well it's working.
When are you getting your Viv Stenius tattoo?
We'll see, because I think that sounds a bit like a dinosaur. So maybe I'll just get like a little dinosaur tattoo.
Oh my God, yeah, like a two-headed dinosaur. One head's Viv,
one's
head's
a goat,
Blackstenius.
And one head is like a dinosaur body.
Yeah, love that.
No, I'm being really impressed with it. I think her game intelligence is what makes her, what kind of takes her to the next level. And she often gets criticised for disappearing in games, or you know, not taking as many shots as she should, but she is an efficient striker and she is not going to take a shot unless she's pretty confident that it will at least be on target. So rather than just kind of whacking off a shot every time she gets near the box, she plays a more intelligent game and will only do that if she knows she's going to, you know, potentially score or get it on target. So I think that actually makes her really efficient. What we're seeing now from her is her work off the ball and her work not in front of goal, which she doesn't get enough credit for, in my opinion. And we saw a lot of that when she was playing up front for Arsenal. She did do a huge amount of work off the ball. And now when we're seeing these passes, when she's playing in the number 10 role and we're seeing these unbelievable passes, she's kind of finally getting that credit. I think she's been doing a lot of that work for a long time, but now it's kind of has a spotlight shone on it.
I 100% agree with that. I think, you know, she's a playmaker. She's not only a goal scorer, but she is a playmaker. And I think now that she has Blackstenius up there, I mean, you know, she's had fantastic link-up play in the past with other players. But I think now that there's sort of a new energy that's come to the squad, she's got this new dynamic with Blackstenius where she can sort of be a bit more of a feeder and be happy in that role. I mean, 30 assists is absolutely incredible in its own right by itself. So, yeah, I think we're going to start to see that there's going to be that kind of link-up play just going forwards further and further. And I do agree. I know there were some suggestions or questions at the sort of start of this year about whether she might be sort of looking to go elsewhere or head off into Europe. But I think now that she's got that link up with Blastinius kind of sorted, I see those questions being nullified a little bit now.
Tell us what it's like as well to face Miedemar. Obviously not something that I don't think Rachel and I are ever going to experience, but what is it like to come up against a player like her?
To be honest, I'd rather not comment on it. It's pretty traumatic,
actually. PTSD.
It's pretty painful to relive. No, I mean, we played her. I think I last played against her in the FA Cup with Palace at the back end of last season. And the score kind of says it all. It was 9-0. But why are you laughing? Why are you laughing?
Sorry.
I mean, it was 1-0 at half time, so I'll take that
okay.
as a win.
All right.
Is that a win if your second half then was 8-0?
It was kind of a
just
win
based
for
on
us.
The first half, okay, right.
I think it was you know, from 1-0 you can go somewhere from there. When it ends 9-0, you're thinking, okay, well something's gone wrong. Yeah, I mean she didn't actually start that game. And then she came on, and I think we were about 3-0 down at that point. And obviously you can see the escalation of the goals from the 3-0 to the 9-0, and a big part of that was to do with Miedemar entering the field of play. And I think I probably let out a quite audible, noticeable sigh, sort of a downward looking into the floor as if I just wanted it to open up and eat me alive. But I think that's just it. I mean, you try and save the ball in front of you as it's coming towards you, but Miedema's one of those players who completely blindsides you. It blindsides defenders. And so you often get into a situation where she's completely unmarked because she's moved around so often before the ball actually reaches the edge of the box or even in the box. And I think that's the beauty of what she does. It's not necessarily that she has to have the most amount of possession in the game. It's just that the one or two touches that she does have are the critical ones, and they often find themselves in the back of the net, which is devastating for a keeper to pick a ball out of the back of the net 9 times and have about 6 of those be due to Miedema. But at least I can say I was on the same field as her at one point in my career, and I'll take that as a win.
Probably one of the best things. I find it hilarious. I love the way Vivian Miedema is just so nonchalant about everything. She's spoken quite a lot about how she is just so focused on football. She doesn't really care about much else apart from the game, the pitch, and scoring goals. So I find it quite funny that there's always such a big narrative and discussion around her as a player, her legacy, when she's not scoring, if she is scoring, etc., etc., and how she just doesn't give a shit. Her whole presence, her whole persona, her whole demeanor, her body language, she just doesn't give a shit. The swagger that she has and the way she continually delivers, regardless of what people are saying, is so incredible as well.
Yeah, I'm a little bit bored of that because that is what she is, and she's never kind of apologized for that. And we know why she's like that. We know that it's not because she doesn't care. She wants to score, or she wants to set up a teammate to score. So the whole it does kind of annoy me when it's mentioned every single time she plays, you know, or if they're losing, suddenly it means more than when she's nonchalant when they're winning. And it's like, it doesn't. She's consistent in the way that she celebrates goals. But there was a great article with Kieran Tyvum in The Athletic back in 2020, where they went through some of her goals and the detail that she goes into in terms of what's going on in her head before each of these goals is like mind-blowing. You know, we probably don't realize that as, you know, people who don't actually play the game to that level, but all of these strikers, what's going on in their head, the intelligence of reading players and reading situations so quickly and deciding, you know, in a split second to do something different or to switch a ball or to aim in a different direction or to hit it in a different way. And so I would recommend reading that article to kind of get an idea of what goes through a player's head when they're in those situations. It's really, really interesting. And maybe that's why when she scores, she just doesn't have the energy then to celebrate after all of that like calculation that's gone on before the goal.
Yeah, I mean, the decisions you have to make and the speed in which you have to make them as a footballer is ridiculous, especially when you're playing as a centre forward, because you, like she mentions in the piece, you know, an opportunity can go in an instant if you don't make the right decision, if you decide to pass rather than shoot. And I think as fans as well, or people that watch the game, or even Chloe as being a goalkeeper as well, you probably have a brilliant vantage point because you're at the other end of the pitch, you kind of see everything. I imagine sometimes you're looking at your centre forwards and thinking, shoot, and they, you know, pass it to the right or whatever. I've seen that with Miedema sometimes where she's decided to pass. I'm like, just shoot, what are you doing? Like, it's those moments that really, I think, separate the best of the best, because the best, like Miedema, make the right decisions in the right moments, and that's what kind of takes them to another level. And other ones, they either don't have the confidence, so they, you know, they want to get rid of the ball, they don't want to take it on, or they just don't make the right decisions at the right time. And she is another level because she is a complete product. And I think these last few weeks as well were showing how she is providing a lot of assists for her teammates and playing a bit more of a creative playmaker role. And it's almost like she has kind of evolved into even more than she was before, which was everyone knew her as a deadly finisher. And now she's just kind of even more than that.
Yeah. And there was a great quote in that piece. She said, "To me, it's about playing simple football, just doing the right thing and not trying anything weird or fancy. Football is a simple game. People just make it very complicated."
I think that sums up her personality as well. Like, yeah, she's quite a simple person in a brilliant way. Like, she's not someone who, like, she's quite low-key on social media. Like, she's quite a straightforward, normal person. She's not someone who, you know, is driving fast cars or, you know, has loads of different hobbies. Like, she seems pretty chill. She seems like she just kind of, like, wants to watch Netflix and hang out. Like, that's her. And I feel like that quote epitomizes Miedema, because she just wants to play football and score goals. Like, that's it. And yeah, that's football at the end of the day, right?
I think she does things just, I think it's the simplicity of her style of play. I think I agree. Like, she's not a kind of fancy step over type player. She's very much, you know, the intricacy of just getting things, the simple things right. And I think, you know, when you look at the standard of the WSL now, the chances that you have are very far and few between sometimes. And especially in some of the sort of harder opposition games, the Chelsea's, the Man City's, I mean, you might only get two or three chances and those chances are going to be critical. But, you know, you can always, almost always rely on Miedema to put those chances in the back of the net. It's very rare that she misses, and I think that is what you need, that kind of almost certainty that once that ball hits Miedema in the box at some point, it's going to produce a goal.
Here's hoping we can keep another goat in the WSL, because I just want all the good players in the WSL so that we can watch them. I'm greedy.
I don't think it's going to happen. I'm so sorry.
Gruner, Van der Sonder drives it across, brilliant header.
So we're recording this on Tuesday, which is International Women's Day, the International Day of the Woman. So we wanted to give some shout outs to our favourite women in football, our favourite women outside of the game, those in our personal lives who are really supporting us, giving us confidence, guidance, whatever it may be. So Rachel, I want you to give us a little sprinkling of your favourite gals.
Yeah, I chatted with Soph about this yesterday, and I think we talked about the fact that, like, pretty much everyone we've been surrounded by from the beginning has been strong, hardworking women, which has been amazing. So from the likes of Jen O'Neill, right, you know, right back when we started paving the way for people like us getting into media, and she still is. So she's definitely one. We've got this great group of women that really developed from the 2020 She Believes Cup right before lockdown came in, who I definitely want to give a shout out to. Susie Rack at The Guardian, Molly Hudson at The Times, Emma Sanders from the BBC, and Claire Bloomfield, formerly Daily Mail and freelance and now head of women's football at the European Club Association. That's our little group of strong women who always are always there for advice, always there to kind of boost you, kind of make you maybe see the impact and influence of what you're doing. I think we as women are not very good at giving ourselves credit for the work that we do, or stepping back and kind of appreciating the progress that's been made. And that's, you know, that's one good thing about days like International Women's Day, is that we can actually try and stop and look at the progress that we've made and kind of the influence that the people around us have had. Obviously, Chloe, you know this, our agents, you know, Jo Tong, Chloe Shearer, are some seriously badass, strong women who are very, very inspiring for us. But for me, and I'm going to embarrass her now, I'm probably going to say Sophie, my wife. I'm very lucky that I get to work with my wife. But from a business partner point of view, you know, running Girls in the Ball together.
I love it.
She's definitely been hugely inspirational in terms of like pushing herself out of her comfort zone, looking how far she's come in the last 10 years from she used to get like super like nervous and embarrassed talking to a player and her cheeks would go red. And now she's come so far, and like seeing her kind of step up and do a halftime piece on BBC One one of the football matches with Joe Curry is such a big kind of transformation for her. And she is like definitely someone you would want to have on your team when you're working, because she gives her all to everything. We'll try lots of new things. We'll learn lots of new things by herself. She built our website, like having never done any kind of website work before. It kind of gives you an example of what she's like, and is always striving to do more and do better, and never really gives herself enough credit for the great work that she does. So she's definitely the driving force behind Girls in the Ball. And deserves that. Obviously, I'm biased because she's my wife, but definitely the perfect business partner. And I think the fact that we can live together and work together says a lot about life.
And you don't hate each other, because not many people, not many couples can do that.
No, they can't.
That is love, my friends. Yeah. That is love. So that was beautiful. I nearly cried. That was so good. Yeah. Chloe, how about you?
Top brownie points.
Yeah, right. I'm expecting some big things for your birthday this year.
She doesn't know. She's going to kill me.
We're going to clip this and put it out, and we're expecting big things.
I think for me, I think as a player, having some absolutely incredible captains. I mean, Jenna Scalacci, a massive part of my career with Spurs, one of my best mates, and we've now just launched a camp together, actually. So we're actually going into business a little bit as
love
well.
This.
But she's been an incredible support. I mean, you know, sort of what goes on behind the scenes, it can be really difficult. It's such a tough career sometimes. You go through so many highs and so many lows, and we've been on this massive Spurs journey for you know, for 5-6 years, and she's been a, you know, Spurs captain for about 11 years. So she's just an absolute legend. She's just an absolute rock. And AJ, my captain now at Palace, again, another absolute inspiration. She's such a leader on and off the field. And, you know, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes, and she's always the first person to check and see if you're okay, and to fight and push for, you know, for more for the girls. And she's just an absolute rallier, you know, and she also has a full-time job as well, as many other girls do. And I just think she's an absolute inspiration. So massive shout out to AJ, and also our incredible physio, Lila, who is obviously hard at work trying to sort out this leg. And before that, it was the finger. And then before that, it's the concussions.
Oh my
and,
God. Causing, you know, her so much grief, Chloe, for God's sake.
I've pretty much put her in business. but no, she's incredible. And she's such a kind, lovely soul. And she's just so experienced and so knowledgeable. And we just all trust her and love her to pieces. She's one of the girls. So she's a massive shout out to her as well. And, you know, just to echo what you were saying as well about our agent, Joe and Chloe and the gang. I mean, I went through some really difficult times with Spurs, sort of leaving Spurs and sort of speaking up against some of the stuff that was happening, the treatment of players. And it was a really... a quite vulnerable time, and Joe and the gang were a massive part of the support and advice to sort of see me through that period and give me lots of guidance. So yeah, I'm forever in their debt for what they've done. So yeah, but I think there's just so many amazing women in football. You could go on and on and on, because I just think that the whole community just generally is such a vibe. Everyone just seems to have each other's backs, and it's just beautiful. And, you know, even meeting you guys and doing this podcast this year and this season has been absolutely incredible to get you to know you guys on a personal level.
Oh,
and
so, you know,
get to the point,
man,
where we can just absolutely rip the shit out of each other. it's just so heartwarming sometimes. So yeah, it's an absolute highlight of my week. So yeah, peace to you guys. Happy International Women's Day, gang.
Amen.
Top that, Flum.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure now. I guess I'll start by shouting out my mum. I know a lot of people who have played women's football or played, you know, football as a young girl will know that it relies on a parent driving you around, having access to transport in order to play. And my mum did that for me for a very good number of years. Friday nights would drive me to training at QPR out by Heathrow, would drive me to Lord knows where on a Sunday to play a game. And she was really supportive of my passion. She, you know, spent a couple of years of the early years of my life being absolutely gutted that I wasn't into pink and dresses, because when she had three boys and then I came along and it was a girl, and she got really excited and was like, it's going to be like her dream little girl that she could dress up in dresses. And I think it did take her a little while to adjust to the fact that I wasn't going to be, you know, that type of girl, which is absolutely fine. And I think she realised that I was going to be special in a unique way of, you know, I was going to love football, and I was going to, you know, define my own way of what it means to be a woman. And I think that's really important to me, is reflecting on the fact that there's no one woman in football. I'm, you know, I would identify myself as a tomboy. I like wearing football shirts and tracksuits, and that's what makes me comfortable. And lots of women in football like wearing pink. They like having fake eyelashes. They love having their nails done. They love getting their brows done. And that's awesome as well. And, you know, there is no one definition of what it means to be a woman in football. And I think it's been really interesting with someone like my mum, for her maybe to go through that same sort of journey and realising that her daughter loves football, loves the game, and she was going to support my passion, my want to play in it and also to work in it. And it's amazing as well to see, you know, those little texts, I think we mentioned it last week, that you get when my mom's like, oh, they're talking about equality, equal pay on Radio 4, and she'll drop me WhatsApps and things like that. So I think that's been really special to kind of almost make a football fan out of my mum when she had no connection, because, you know, her parents didn't like football. She hated PE at school, but she's now got a connection in the game because of me. And I also wanted to shout out loads of my allies. Obviously, our production team, Charlie and Finn here at Ramble, you know, two great guys who've been really supportive of, you know, they came up with the idea for the podcast, approached us about it, and the Ramble team wanted to do a women's football podcast, which is brilliant. And there's so many guys like that in this industry. You know, I started out mainly working in men's football years ago, and all the opportunities I've been given in men's football have pretty much all come from men. So, you know, it needed male allies to kind of look at my work and appreciate what I was doing and give me those opportunities. And I think they deserve a lot of credit because, you know, the way the industry is at the moment, there are mainly men at the top of, you know, radio companies, broadcast companies, TV, whatever, newspapers, everywhere you look, it is mainly men at the top of these places. But that doesn't necessarily mean that women aren't getting the opportunities or they're getting blocked out. But obviously it requires, know, a sense of kind of self-awareness to then change things. And, you know, we will get to a point where there will be more women at the top of these companies. But I think it is massive when you see a lot of male allies in the industry kind of hiring women for their worth, their ability, being valued for their opinions as well, and not just being put there as a tick box, which, you know, I feel like sometimes we have to battle against that as well. And I think what's so brilliant about the women's football space, like you mentioned, Rachel, is that there are a lot of women in it, and I think that makes it a really kind of solid, supportive community. And I think men's football lacks that a lot. Like, I often go to games and I am still the only woman in the press box, and it is quite a strange feeling. And I do now, when I go to games, men's and women's games, I see more women, but it's all white women. And I think that is something that on International Women's Day as an industry we need to really reflect on. Obviously, like Rachel and I were at the Sports Journalists Association Awards last night. And as a whole, in the bubbles I think we operate in, we probably think of sport and football as a really diverse space. And then when you go to places like that and you see a room full of 700 people and most of those people are all white and are all male, you're like, oh, wait, actually the progress maybe isn't as great as I think in my little, you know, vacuum. So I think there's so much that still needs to be done. But I think Rachel's right. I think it's really important to reflect on how you got there, who's helped you along the way. You know, so many people have given me opportunities that, you know, I wouldn't have had without them. And that includes men and women. So shout out all you guys on International Women's Day. Thanks to everyone that listens as well. You know, there's so many amazing male allies in women's football who we wouldn't be there without their support and all our listeners. So shout out to you guys. I think we'll probably wrap things up there.
That was beautiful.
I feel like I just went on like this whole rant about life.
None of that was scripted. None of that was, it was very much, as you said about the guys here, they wanted us to put our own spin on this and, you know, make sure we spoke from a personal perspective on International Women's Day. So, and I think we all did that really well. It wasn't something that was felt in any way forced. And like I said, opportunities like this to really reflect are quite important because, you know, I just don't think we do it enough, especially women, give ourselves kind of the credit that maybe women deserve for the work that's been done so far.
Amen, sister. Where's everyone this weekend? Chloe's going to be maybe back in A&E. We hope not. Getting a scan.
I will be having an MRI scan on Saturday. So that's something to look forward to. And then probably maybe try and get a lift down to the Lewis game. We've got Lewis away this weekend in the league. So yeah, hoping to pick up some points from that game, which should be good. Yeah.
Hitchhike your way to Lewis.
Literally that.
Rachel, where are you going to be? You're so bad at remembering your diary. Every single time you're like, where am I going to be?
West Ham, Chelsea on Thursday.
See you there. See you in Dagenham.
I feel like I'm doing Reading in the morning on Saturday.
I'm doing Chelsea Villa on Sunday.
I think I'm doing Chelsea Villa as well on Sunday.
Okay, wow.
And guess what? Going to the rugby on Saturday, which I'm very excited for.
Well, that's
England,
a change.
Ireland. So I've just, you know, had a great chat about my wife.
Wow.
And now we're going to England, Ireland, which is always an interesting fixture.
Wow,
for us.
Wow, love that. Also, we'd really love people's opinions on Dagenham, because every single time I drive to Dagenham, I just find that people in Dagenham drive like maniacs. I don't know if anyone else has experienced that. Going there on Thursday and quite dreading the drive. So any feedback on,
I get the tube,
drivers in Dagenham, let me know. We'll chat about it on next week's show. That is it for today's episode of Upfront on Football Ramble Presents. If you've got any questions for us, tweet us at Football Ramble, at Floyd Tweet, at Girls on the Ball, or at Morgie_89. We'll see you all next week.
Up Front is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.